Dinner time hit, but your motivation didn't. It's time to try something different than the same three dinners you make every week. Cool off with a refreshing large Big Gulp drink at 7-Eleven. Cold, refreshing, and made the way you like it. It's available at 7-Eleven and just 59 cents with 7 rewards. Visit your local Columbus 7-Eleven and satisfy that craving today. Valid through 6/23/26. While supplies last, participating stores see app for full terms.
During Memorial Day at Lowe's, shop household must-haves for less. Save $80 on a Charbroil Performance Series 4-Burner Grill to chef up something special. Plus, get up to 45% off select major appliances to keep things fresh. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/27. While supplies last, selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
We are several days now into the search for Nancy Guthrie. The FBI has moved from assisting the Pima County Sheriff's Department to jointly working on the case. More than 100 investigators are deployed. A $50,000 reward has been posted. Ransom notes were sent to media outlets in the family, referencing an Apple Watch and a floodlight, demanding millions in Bitcoin with two deadlines. That's the atmosphere. That's the slate as to which things are sitting at as of us sitting here having this discussion right at this moment. The FBI says there has been no proof of life, no follow-up communications, and one arrest has already been made for an imposter ransom demand. To help us understand how the Bureau actually runs a kidnapping investigation at this scale and what the ransom communications are really telling investigators, we're joined by retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer to help us break this down. I know you have been all over this, and everyone's been seeing your face talking about this case. Let's talk. Let's kind of break down what is going on here, because when the FBI moves from assisting a local sheriff's department to jointly working a case, which is what is happening here, tell us, what does that actually mean in practice? Who's calling the shots? How does the chain of command change, and what resources does the Bureau bring to the table that the county sheriff's office just simply probably doesn't have?
Well, when you look at this, the minute that the face changed to possibly being a kidnapping, that's why the FBI has moved in and taken over that part of the investigation. And the sheriff said that. Any questions, anything to do with the kidnapping, the Bureau is going to handle, and the Bureau is handling. So what you're seeing, number one, is they're going to swoop in and they're going to redo everything. That's why you saw a new search warrant that would have had to have been obtained to research or to research Nancy's home and her property. You also are seeing a re-canvassing of the neighborhood, specifically of Annie's neighborhood, I saw. You're going to see them go in and start all over from step one as if it was the first day of the investigation instead of the third day when they really got involved. And this requires a lot of manpower, and that's why you're seeing 100 agents that are assigned.
And that's great. But obviously, time is not on their side. We're talking several days in here. We're talking a woman who, right out of the gate, they were saying 24 hours without her medication and she could be dead. We're well past that mark at this point.
Yeah.
The FBI getting involved. Wonderful. That's great. Restarting this, getting, you know, taking the investigation and handling it the way they would. We also have a crime scene that was released by the local sheriff, where we had local, we're not local reporters. We had Brian Enton was over there, and I'm not knocking his coverage. He's a great reporter.
He is.
Great coverage on this case. Bravo to Brian Enton. But it is, I was rather taken aback when I was looking at his coverage, and there he is, and there's blood, or his photographer's getting blood right there on the stoop of the entrance to her home when they had released it for that day. God, that was kind of like, what the hell is going on here? Why is he that close? It's not like he broke any rules to get there. It's because there were no rules to be followed at that moment in time of how close anyone could get close to this crime scene. So the FBI comes in these days later. I know from a legal standpoint, that can be pretty damaging. You have, you know, the evidence, the chain of command, the chain of custody. You have people that are going in and trampling on an active crime scene, and now suddenly it's closed off, and now it's active again. Tell me about that. Tell me about the chaos that's ensued here, and what does that mean for the ongoing investigation?
Well, I have to say it's one of the worst things that can happen. I can't think of in 28 years of getting search warrants ever going back and asking a judge for a second search warrant. It's bad because, like you said, the evidence could be tainted because it sat there and you don't know who entered and who exited. Maybe they know in this situation, but nevertheless, it's not good for the investigation. I agree. But it had to be done. It looked like maybe the garage hadn't even been searched, judging by the amount of time they spent there. They took a lot of evidence, too. It's important for people to understand the Bureau doesn't just go in there and just say, oh, I'm going to just take this and this and this. No, everything they take is because they believe it has evidentiary value. And they
Jennifer, can I jump in here for a second?
Yeah.
As a layperson, how do they decide how many agents are going to be assigned to such a case? Because they're, I imagine throughout the United States, there are numerous been, I don't want to say kidnapped or abducted, but they're missing. So how do they decide we're sending in hundreds of agents for this case versus maybe an indigenous person who gets maybe one person assigned to the case? How do they decide this?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, the president said that the full, resources of the FBI he wants on this case. Kash Patel basically said the same thing. And in fact, purportedly went down there. I don't know, because he was just in a press conference this morning on the other
side. Did he get the jacket he likes? Did he wear the right jacket this time, or did they stop everything for him?
I don't know. I saw him in a press conference this morning with a nice suit on, which is
what
I expect.
Excellent.
On the Benghazi case, but nevertheless, on this case, it really comes down to management authority. And in the Idaho case, they had 60 agents on that case.
Yeah.
Just to give you some comparison, on this case, we have 100 agents on this case, but it's a little bit different because it's a possible kidnapping. So you can imagine all the resources that are being used to run down that ransom note.
Mm-hmm.
And that, what I think is likely going to be a rabbit trail.
Let's talk about that ransom note, or ransom notes, plural, because there's been several of them now to K-Gun, to TMZ, and to another local station. K-Gun's a local TV station there. And all of them, a little different. One has already been debunked, and they've already got somebody in custody that looks like he's straight out of Central Casting in 1987 for a Flock of Seagulls music video. He really does. Wow, it's like a time traveler they've arrested. I was kind of thinking like Quantum Leap's happening. But the others, we don't know. We don't know their legitimacy. We don't know exactly what they know, what they don't know. There's some information in there, and Harvey has said this from TMZ, just on his own opinion, that there was information in one of the notes that maybe, and I'm paraphrasing here, maybe information only the kidnapper would know, if there's in fact a kidnapper. Let's talk about that for a second, Jen, because there's a lot of things somebody could glean. Somebody could guess. If I were a nefarious, horrible human being thinking, hey, here's a way I'm going to cash in. I'm going to send out fake notes saying I have Savannah Guthrie's mom. And if you're wanting to make it sound legitimate, you might, you know, go for some semi-generic things, much like, you know, maybe a fake psychic would do, and say, oh, I know this. There's a floodlight. She's got an Apple Watch, pacemaker. Those are some obvious things anyone could guess. And we haven't seen the note ourselves. I don't believe you have, unless you're going to tell us you have. But is there more in this note, you think, that is convincing the FBI and the authorities that Nancy is in fact alive, other than some good guesses or educated guesses or things that, you know, one could put, you know, 10 out of 20 things, and they're striking as, yes, this could very well be accurate, in terms of understanding the legitimacy of her possibly still being alive?
Well, a couple of things. I wanted to say that the note that was debunked, if you will, or the demand that was debunked, actually came via a text message.
Okay. And
so that's separate from these other three notes. These other three notes, my understanding, are similar, if not the same, just sent to three different media outlets.
Okay.
Harvey, who is in charge of TMZ, created TMZ. He held up that note, and you could actually kind of read. Like I said, I could read a telephone number. And, you know, it was very difficult to make out the typing. It was an email, by the way. But nevertheless, in that, what has the FBI concerned? They said these three things: the mention of the floodlight, the mention of the Apple Watch, and the timeline, right? A 5 o'clock deadline and then a Monday deadline. Now, to your point, could you make that up? I don't think they needed to make it up. I'm actually working on a timeline right now to show that what they said was visible on social media and mainstream media.
Yeah.
So there didn't need to be any guesswork in terms of guessing, because it was already out there. Remember, this note did not come in, at least to TMZ, until 3 days. Yeah. And I believe the other outlets. So there's a lot of time to go by. These notes, this is the problem with these notes. A kidnapper does not want to go to the media, because the media, they know, first of all, aren't going to pay. And second of all, are going to hand it over to law enforcement. And that's the last thing you want. What you to do is kidnap and almost simultaneously, like, say, a famous case, which is the only other case I can think of where they went to the media, is the Lindbergh case. But they left a note there and wrote it all out. And you know, and then only later in newspaper correspondence did they continue to correspond. But that's the only one I know of. I mean, this is out of hundreds and hundreds of cases, me personally involved in three. It's ridiculous. This, they want money. A true kidnapper wants, show me the money. And to do it this way makes no sense.
And wouldn't the kidnapper, if money is the ultimate goal here, wouldn't you have a clear way of accepting that money? As of now, we don't have one of those. We still have, we have Savannah and her siblings going on making these videos saying, tell us more. Tell us more about how we can communicate with you, what you want. And they're getting nothing as far as we're aware of right now.
Well, we'd have proof that she's still alive. We don't have proof
of life either. I mean, that's the thing. If you got her and you want the money, okay, the ball's in your court. And so far, we don't know if anyone's even on the other side of the court.
Well, playing devil's advocate and going off of what Harvey said, he specifically said in the note, it says, this will be your one and only contact. There's going to be no more contacts. So if that's the case, and they provided an account of some sort or a place, Harvey also intimated that this person is well knows the Tucson area, or maybe not exactly Tucson, but Tucson and its surrounding areas, how he put it, even he said spanning as far as New Mexico. And I'm going to gauge that as meaning where they said the drop was. If it's not to a particular account, you know.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, we're talking digital drops here, from what I understand, you know, with Bitcoin and such. And the chain of being able to trace that back is somewhat limited. It can be done very anonymously, which is why, you know, they would have likely have chosen that sort of a route. is there, you know, if you're the family, obviously, you know, money is not an object when it's coming down to the life of the person that you love and you want them to come back. But you also don't want to be, you know, swindled into sending over millions of dollars that you're never, ever going to get back. But there's not really a lever that exists to reverse such a thing with something like Bitcoin, should it be fraudulent. So what do you think the FBI is advising the family to do at this point? Are they advising the family in any way, shape, or form on how to handle this, other than let's put the responses out? That's kind of been the observation on the videos that Savannah and her family has put out, very scripted, very specific in what they're saying. Are they saying, you know, let's pay it? Are they saying, keep making videos, show us proof of life? If there's proof of life, then pay it. What do you think's going on behind the scenes?
Behind the scenes, the FBI is saying, don't pay it. There's no proof of life. You're going to lose your money. That's what their advice is. And the SEC made it very clear. We're going to offer the family advice, but at the end of the day, it's going to be their choice of what words they speak, how they do their pleas, and what they do in terms of their money. Mm-hmm. But also, even though, you know, Savannah Guthrie, worth $40 million, if you look her up, people don't just have that money sending around.
No.
That's invested in properties. That's invested in stocks and bonds and other assets. It's so ridiculous that people think, oh, you just have 40 million.
That's not how that works.
Not typically. Maybe Sean Khan, you know, maybe Trump, but not your typical person who's just worked hard and has $40 million attributed. Yeah.
It's not going to be liquidly available to just, oh, let me write you a check right now. It's like, let me liquidate something to do something like that. There's just so many questions on this case, and we don't have any answers. One arrest has already been made with what the FBI is calling the imposter ransom demand. Let's talk about that for a moment, because these sort of things pop up. Number one, there's not, I was kind of shocked by the sheer lack of situations like this that actually happen in our country. There's not a lot of ransom demand kidnapping elderly people, like less than 100 a year in our country. So the sheer odds of this even taking place are slim to nil. But let's talk about the imposter that's already been caught, a criminal complaint being presented to a magistrate judge. How common is it in a high profile case? How quickly can the FBI typically distinguish a real demand from an opportunist? And why are they looking at some of these demands, or the specific letter that we've been mentioning earlier, as being more serious than this one? And how are they able to hone in on, how did they find somebody already?
So a couple of things. First of all, the other I mentioned was text message. So I feel like the digital trail was pretty clear, and that's how they could figure that out. Not a real sophisticated guy.
Yeah.
Maybe his earrings should have told us that.
The flock of seagulls guy. Yeah.
Flock of seagulls guy. Secondarily, this happens all the time. This, what I'm going to say, not what you said, you're spot on with the other, but almost every missing case. And this is something whenever I talk to the victim families, I tell them, you're going to be contacted. And you're they're going to say, they might even have their voice. We actually did a whole segment on News Nation about this, that people are extorted. Send me the money. You know, I have your child. So this is something that's really become a business. So it's ridiculous and it's out there. It's just that you don't have 100 FBI agents on it. So we have 100 FBI agents on it. So this guy's caught like this. The other person that went to the media, again, they didn't contact the family at all. That's why they're more difficult, but that's also to catch. I mean, but that's also why nothing's happening. Yeah. They're not going to get their money.
Yeah. It's not, I mean, if this is a crime of opportunity where somebody is thinking, okay, this will be a quick payday, quicken out. I don't know that they thought this through. This is really not the type of person or the person you'd want to take, because this is going to get you. I mean, you literally have the president saying, "We can give you any resource you want." You're gonna dramatically raise your odds of getting caught. in something like this. So I think that, you know, that may be a something that wasn't considered by whoever did this. At Thursday's press conference, Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos denied reports of forced entry, denied that cameras were smashed or destroyed, and called media reports naming potential suspects reckless. Standing next to him, FBI SAC Heath Janke delivered a different kind of message, announcing a reward, detailing ransom note contents, and warning imposters that they would be prosecuted, as we're already seeing. Meanwhile, investigators returned to Nancy Guthrie's home just the other day, a day after the sheriff said processing was complete, with canine units, evidence bags, and agents from multiple federal agencies. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, is with us to help continue to break this down. What could they have missed in the initial investigation when it was just the local sheriff's department to the FBI going in? Are we talking dramatic differences here in terms of what is likely being gleaned off of the scene?
We're talking dramatic differences. And I say that I was assigned for 15 years, to local authorities. And they are great, by the way, my best years. I loved working with them. But they have very different protocols than we have. So as an example, I saw a complete grid search being done outside of that house again. Mm-hmm. You know, that's walking, you know, steps apart from one another, looking and making sure nothing is in your grid. Then we saw hours of investigation inside the home. So while it should be exactly the same, it's not. I just look, evidence response teams for the FBI, that is what they do. That's what they do day in and day out. And they are so highly trained at it. And anytime you do something a million times, you get great at it. How many murder investigation scenes has the, I don't want to pronounce it right. Is it Pima? Is it?
I think so. I could be wrong.
I think so.
Anyway, has that sheriff's office conducted?
Yeah.
And what is the level of specificity they have in terms of DNA, you know, collection, fingerprint collection, everything they've got to collect there. So it's supposed to be the same. It's going to not be the same.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you have different skill levels, different assets, different resources. You're going to have, you know, and everybody hopefully going in, you know, with their best foot forward on all this. Some just able to achieve, you know, more than others. It's, you know, it's the high school basketball team versus the NBA coming in. Both can play basketball. It's a different game, depending on who's playing it, basically. Let's talk about the investigation that's going on right now. And I don't want to name anybody because I think it's far too early and we have no information saying anything about anybody. But obviously, when there's a crime like this that takes place, you're going to look in a lot of directions. Who's close to the person? You're going to look at family. You're going to look at friends. You're going to look at anybody who may have been coming and going. She was an 84-year-old woman. We do understand that there may have been some help on and off, as someone who's 80-some-year-old may have. Sometimes there's assistants that come and go to help. So anybody and everybody in that ether is going to be looked at. And I think that's important to understand that. And the early stages of an investigation, there may be people that are being questioned. People may be coming and going from one's house with devices or things to scan devices. I know there's been some reports that there was some Cellbrite equipment being taken from, I think, some of the Guthrie's family's homes. This is normal procedure. This is not "we think you did it" type procedure. This is let's just get everything we possibly can onto our canvas so we know what we're dealing with. Is it not at the beginning in something like this?
Yeah, but I tell you, the first thing I would do in this case, if I came in with the bureau, I'd get everybody polygraphed.
Yeah, okay.
Right off the bat, hey, listen, let's set up your polygraph. Why we, you know, search your homes and search your vehicles and everything else. So that's where I start. And then that's a great investigative tool. I know some of you don't believe in the polygraph. Some of you do believe. I did a whole show with Eric Johnson, one of my favorite FBI polygraphers. And I can tell you, I've been convinced it's real. I've taken many, many polygraphs. And the first time I took one, Tony, I didn't believe in it. I think I might have told you this story. Mm-hmm. They said, put 1 through 10 in your pocket and lie about each one. And then, you know, I had number two in my pocket. Do you have one, two, three, four? No, 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 no. And then at the end, he said, just give me the number two. You know,
oh, wow.
Liar, like the thing.
So you would fail the polygraph.
Yeah. If yeah. I lied, I'd fail the polygraph. Yeah. I had to take one every 3 years in the FBI.
Sure. Okay.
But yes, I cannot, other than if you drug yourself, there you and then you can. But anyway.
Some people can. But I mean, obviously, some people can fool it. But I mean, it's obviously it's not admissible in court. But as an investigative tool to give you a direction to go down, that's where you're saying it could be very, very helpful at this stage of the investigation.
Yeah. You put them on the polygraph and the thing blows up. You're like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about an inconclusive read. I'm talking about mm-hmm. something like that. So for me, that's the number one thing I do. I do it in missing cases, did it in all my cases involving mm-hmm. something, anything like this, kidnapping, extortion, mm-hmm. some sort of violent crime. So, sure. Okay, now let's get past that. So I want to, I'm sure they did that. Mm-hmm. I'm so curious to know who took one, who didn't. And I understand, and people might be saying this in chat, listen, Jen, there's no way I'm getting on the box. I could be innocent and prove.
Sure.
I've never seen it that way. I've seen it the other way. I've seen guilty mm-hmm. people beat it. Seen that a lot. I haven't seen it the other way. But back to your question, Tony, because I digressed. They've got to do the polygraphs. But yes, some of this investigation is quite normal. You're going to canvass the area. I think I got to be honest with you. For them to be canvassing Annie's area and re-canvassing it, I did find a little different.
Yeah.
Everything at Nancy's should be done. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're not, as far as we know, canvassing Savannah's. They're not, and I understand.
Or that cross your T and dot your I so later nobody can say you didn't do it.
Yeah, I'm just saying it does raise a few questions mm-hmm. with me. Also, as I recall, there were bags, you know, some evidence mm-hmm. being taken. Like,
sure. It certainly, you look at it and go, I wonder what that's about. But that, and that's the thing with a case like this is when we don't know, we try to fill in blanks. And that's what everyone is really doing right now. Let me ask you this, because I want to get your opinion. I had Robin Drake was on yesterday. We were talking about it. You know, Robin, a bit former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. We were talking about this. He's very much of the mindset statistically when he's looking at this, that it was a home invasion gone bad. I know that that's, you know, some are saying not. I mean, again, it's everybody has their opinion at this moment. But what about that? Just the idea that that could be what took place here. Middle of the night, she's not there. We seem to immediately, and I'm just wondering if the framing of this has been off from the beginning because of hope, because nobody wants to think that Nancy's dead or that she was murdered in her house and the body was taken. But could this point more to something like that, a home invasion gone bad? Who knows what exactly could have happened? There's a gazillion things. Some may argue, well, why would an 80-some-year-old fight a home? Who knows? Who knows what could have taken place where she could have been struck? You know, somebody realizes, oh, God, you know, my DNA's under her fingernails now because she reached out. What's the best thing to do? Get rid of the body. The way that the blood drippage, I guess you could say, I don't want to say splatter, was found outside of the house. All of that. What's your take? Could this have been a home invasion gone wrong? How are you reading this?
First of all, I love Robin.
Yeah.
But we come from different worlds.
Sure.
He is on the counter terrorism. Those are terrorism, right?
Yeah.
He's looking at terrorists. He's looking at statistics, things abroad. Yep. I was a violent crime agent.
Yep.
So from my violent crime lens, no.
Okay.
People who commit violent crimes and those sorts of crimes, typically, not always, but they typically hunt in their own backyards near to them in some way. We know Tucson is a rough town. There are rough areas. We know this wasn't one of them. These are multi-million dollar homes. She lived in a million dollar plus home. And so that doesn't make any sense. Number two, for them to come in and, you know, carefully remove the video or the Nest or the Ring cam, I think it's going to end up being a Nest. That doesn't make any sense. Also, we've seen the door. I don't see any signs of forced entry. Plus, he has said there's no sign of forced entry. These home invaders, for anybody who's been in a house that's been home invaded, this is a hot mess, train wreck, smash and grab, kill things in your wake. It's unbelievable. That is not this.
Yeah.
Multiple people seen. They're unsophisticated. They would leave a trail, not just a few droplets of blood, because I think she was probably being carried and that blood was dripping down. And where you see the spatter on the ground, I think was where they halted with her, closed that door, and then continued on. That's just my take. I'm not a blood spatter expert, but obviously I've seen crime scenes with blood spatter. That's just my read on it.
Yeah.
Am I wrong? I could be wrong.
Sure.
But the probability of this being a home invasion gone bad, boo. Probability of this being somebody with some sort of insider information, knowing she was there, knowing or being able to profit from this in some way, whether it's for ransom or whether it's for inheritance or whether it's for life insurance or whatever, that I think is, at the end of the day, is what we're looking at. And why take her out of there? Home invaders don't do that. That they just leave everything behind. But somebody that would want to, two things to me, make sure the evidence is more concealed, right? The same reason people dismantle people. And then the second reason is if it was somebody at all somewhat close to her, they might have actually, in all seriousness, wanted to, you know, bury her with some dignity.
Awesome. Yeah.
Interesting take.
It's so strange, you know, how, I mean, that does play in. And it's crazy because you go, like, why would they care about that if they're already doing this? People are weird.
Yeah.
People are weird.
Look at the bad guys, Tony, that rape and sexually assault women. Yeah. And then the ones that have this weirdness of it, right? They cover their faces, right? Yeah. They keep them. And then others, man, they want them all out there. They want to degrade them and humiliate them up to the moment they lead. But not all. Some have some sense of weird consciousness and cover them up. And I'm just saying, could that have played into it? Just a couple of thoughts for considering.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many questions here and not a lot of answers. And that's what it comes down to right now, is so much speculation. And God, we hope she's able to come back safe. We just don't know. We don't know what's happening right now, what's going to happen. We'll keep covering it and hope to God that this doesn't end tragically. It already is heartbreaking. I can't imagine being Savannah or her family right now. Give us your thoughts in the comments section, wherever you are watching us or listening to us. Substack right now. You can join us absolutely free on our Substack. There's no paywall. You can get all of our videos, all of our reporting a day in advance, hiddenkillers.substack.com. The link is in the description. You can join in the conversation there or on our YouTube, Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski. Search it, press subscribe, and join in there. We'd love to continue this conversation off the air with your thoughts. Let's jump over to another topic, another case that we've been following here for quite some time. David D4VD is us over the age of 30 look and go, huh?
Uh-huh. What?
5 months after 14-year-old Celeste Rivas Hernandez dismembered remains were found inside David's impounded Tesla, the grand jury investigation is entering a critical pressure phase. Witnesses from the singer's inner circle are being arrested and compelled to testify. Outside forensic experts have reportedly been brought in, and multiple sources say an indictment is likely. Yet, still, no charges have been filed. Retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer is with us to help break this down, as she has been throughout this entire case. Jennifer, Neil Langston, we talked about him on the show way back, right back when they arrested, or when they impounded the car, and the PI was talking about somebody on camera parking that car. I believe our first thing that we talked about, I think one of the first people that talked about it, was it possibly being Neil Langston who was behind the wheel of that vehicle. We don't know for sure, but his name was brought up very early in the conversation.
Close friend of David, well-known streamer, recently appeared before the grand jury after being arrested in Montana by seven officers with a warrant from the LAPD robbery homicide for failing to appear as a witness. He was only in front of the jury for 30 to 40 minutes.
Different
from your experience in the FBI, what does such a short testimony from a compelled, previously uncooperative witness tell you about what prosecutors already have and what they were specifically trying to get from Neo?
I plead the fifth.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I plead the fifth.
Yeah.
I plead the fifth.
Over and over and over.
Yep.
You think that's all they got?
Likely. I mean, I can't imagine. That's what I believe. That's what I've seen. When we have to compel somebody to come in, that's what I hear, especially somebody that might have been involved.
Is there, and what's the next lever? If you're being called in by the FBI and you're being called in by a grand jury here to testify, and you're pleading the fifth, are there any other levers they can pull after that? Do they have, I mean, if they have probably more, if they have more dirt on him, could that become a threat? Could that become a threat of, well, we're going to charge you with this crime unless you choose to stop pleading the fifth? Because we already know enough about what you may have going on, if there is something, and we don't know. But if there is something, can that be another lever they pull to try and compel testimony?
Sure. But I think the main thing was they wanted to get him on record pleading the fifth, or, you know, taking the possible chance that he'd cooperate. I think they knew he wouldn't. And so now that's sort of on their record. They know he's not going to cooperate. And I think you can look to see him charged if they have the evidence, and they're going to go after him and then they'll use it. But boy, once you go ahead and do that, it's like fighting that traffic ticket that you're probably guilty of, you know?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're paying more costs than you ever meant to if you decide to fight it. So
this was documentation.
Yeah.
Is this a case where they got what they need to go after David, or is it, you know, they're just really making sure they're crossing those T's and dotting those I's, so when they go in, they got their list stacked and it's good to go? Or is it, we're not quite up to the threshold that we need to be to make an arrest?
Well, look, at the end of the day, in a situation like this, they have purposefully thrown this to the grand jury and to the jurors to make a decision. You know, it drives me crazy when everybody says you can indict a ham sandwich. I just don't believe that. I've been in too many grand juries where they have too many great questions and they take their job seriously. And they are going to be looking at this. And it's just going to depend on really what the grand jury comes down to after they see everything. But they're going to want to see everybody. You can't have a guy like Neo, who's at the heart of all of this, not be brought before them. So those grand jurors are taking that to heart. Wow, didn't say anything? That says a lot. Well, again, that's just my belief.
Sure.
I wasn't there. Yeah.
What do you think the time frame is going to be? Do you think they're actively looking at, in such and such a date, we're going to make an arrest? Do you think that's coming, or do you think we're just stalled?
I don't think we're stalled. I mean, as long as they're still calling witnesses before the grand jury, they're definitely not stalled out. But do they have all the evidence? You would think by now they do. When I say all the evidence, I mean from Tesla and from the digital footprint. The biggest problem is all that digital evidence, not to get it, but to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, this guy, by his own, David meaning, by his own admissions, he said, these were my friends.
Yeah.
People, I didn't get out. This is my life behind, you know, a screen. And so because of that, that trail is going to be immense. So I don't know if they have everything yet. I still think we're looking at more time.
How important do you think Neo is to this? And it's N-E-O. It's not Neo,
the
singer. Yeah. I want people to understand that, who are over 30, who remember Neo, the singer.
Exactly.
This is N-E-O, not N-E-Y-O, just to be clear. Are they still trying to figure out the value that Neo might hold in this entire case? If, let's assume he's pleading the fifth, as they continue to go through more witnesses, once they go through their list of witnesses, are they going to go back and go, okay, you know, Neo seems like he could probably give us a bit more than pleading the fifth if that's what he did. We want to get that out of him. Is that a reevaluation point of going back in and maybe saying, hey, let's cut a deal with them, kind of like what they did, you know, in the Au Pair Affair trial that we just watched with Brendan Banfield, where the au pair who pulled the trigger on one of the two shots ends up getting this deal, this sweetheart deal of time served, you're good, go on, as long as you testify to the story that we are going with here, that this all happened. Is that what's going to be weighed here next? What is going on in the investigative minds as they're pulling all this information in and digesting it?
Well, they're going to try to find who might have been there or have knowledge of what happened to Celeste and take the lowest lying fruit. You know, you, for instance, if Neo, if you have information that Neo was deeply involved in this, you're not going to want to necessarily take your run at him. Mm-hmm. You're going to want to take your run at maybe somebody else that would have had a lesser role. Again, mm-hmm. we don't know what roles everybody had. I've always said there's going to be people involved in this. This is not something David did on his own at all. And I expect multiple people to be involved. So you're going to want the lowest lying fruit. And you're definitely, when you're all done, I would, and I think most of these prosecutors, they're going to make a run at him. And they're going to say, listen, this is what we got for you. You tell us everything, and it better make sense matched up to our evidence. And if it does, then we're going to give you immunity just on what you have to say, not what we knew outside of what you had to say. And instead of getting charged with accessory to murder or a more significant charge, you're going to get a lesser charge. I don't think we'll see anybody get a pass mm-hmm. on this deal. And maybe if it was just say Neo and just David, which again, I don't think that's going to be the case, but just say, and the only one that is interested in a deal is Neo, they're going to make that because there are, in my opinion, there's going to be too much that they can't answer from just digital evidence. They need a witness there to walk them through. How did this go so bad? When exactly did it happen? Who planned this? What's mm-hmm. with the, you know, the burner, the animal incinerator, you know,
yeah.
so many questions. So they'll want to make a deal, I believe. They're going to want to make a deal. It's who with is the question.
Right now, is the question behind the scenes still, was this a homicide or was this some sort of horrible accident or overdose? And then more of the crime occurred after the fact, the cover-up. Are they still, do you think, trying to determine what exactly they're looking at here?
You know what? I can't think of one case that I know of that's an accidental overdose or somebody tripped and fell and hit their head and died that you decide to cut them up and throw them in a Tesla trunk. So I don't think any investigator or prosecutor worth their salt that's just thinking this is just some accident. I think that this was deliberate and maniacal and heinous what they did to that little girl.
Maniacal, heinous, I completely agree. I do just wonder, though, if that was the modality they chose for whatever reason. Not that they murdered her, but something happened in OD and nobody wants to be responsible. And the lengths that people will go to not be accountable, pretty shocking, you know? That, I don't know, it does make me wonder that that could not be the possible modality here in this.
You know what? If they just would have abandoned her, you know, thrown her out at that area, was that San Bernardino, if I remember outside?
I believe so, yeah.
Just kind of, you know, gotten rid of her, thrown her out of a car. Seen that?
A lot of possibilities, but this is the path that somebody went down.
Not this. You don't need to cut somebody up and throw them in your car. And I mean, no. Well, that's my opinion.
Why do you have the incinerator and then not use it?
Oh, I think... You know what?
Was it panic buying? Was it like, well, you know, it's Amazon Day, and they're Amazon 50% off right now.
Yeah, I have it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have these great plans, and then you don't go through with them, or you think it's a great plan, and there's laziness. You know, I always equate it to Pulp Fiction. Now, some of you might not like that movie. I personally love this movie, and let me say why. It's because crime and things like this become normal. And so for them, they already did this, they did this, and then they're carrying on sort of in their life normally, right? He's going on tour, they're leasing a new car, they're smoking and joking. You should see the pictures just the day after that she was found anyway. I mean, it's just unbelievable. They just go on with their life. And so I believe,
that's kind of my point though, Jed, is to you and me, this is insane. Like, right. Who the hell would do this? And I think historically speaking, it is insane. And the odds of people making these choices are not great, but we have this generation of mini narcissists that don't seem to have the empathy gene. And I'm broadly speaking here. I don't know if Neo had anything to do with this, innocent until proven guilty, but there is clearly a narcissistic crisis going on with human beings in our country and lack of empathy for others. All of that behavior you're talking about right there, just kind of moving on with their life, they don't care. It also speaks to someone who would have the modality and the ability to do this without thinking twice. And it's just, it's operational. It's like, well, here's the problem. Here's how we can fix it. Let's just go to Amazon and get an incinerator. And no one's going to be the wiser. And if it covers up their tracks, it covers up their tracks so they can continue on. It's a weird disconnect that a lot of people seem to have. It's a spooky, scary one that a lot of people seem to have. And I'm wondering if we're just seeing this being played out in real life, in real time from some young folks.
I agree with everything you said, but I don't think this was any accident.
Okay.
Okay.
No.
That's fair.
I wonder. I mean, accident, not accident. The modality kind of still is there no matter what, even if it was not an accident. Just the fact that they were able to, because what you're talking about, the videos, the photos, how they were acting right after, even if you had nothing to do with this.
Shouldn't be acting that way.
Why?
If you're a normal person.
Yeah, the cold, callous, like emotionally bankrupt. Yeah. That some people show after tragedy is shocking, and it's scary, and it's spooky. I don't know. So many questions, not a lot of answers yet. The grand jury continues to be convened. We'll continue to cover it. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you get podcasts so you don't miss any of our coverage of this and the many cases that we got for you right here. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, Apple Podcasts, iHeart, Spotify. Hit subscribe and let us know your thoughts in the comment section, either on YouTube or on our Substack. Our Substack, absolutely free right now, no paywall. Get on there, get access to our videos a day before they go live everywhere else. No ads. Hiddenkillers.substack.com. Check it out. The link is in the description. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, as always, thank you so much for coming on and giving us your insights. For Todd, for Stacy, I'm Tony Bruschi. Talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited, no purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at
John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino.
Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino.
Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino.
Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.